This is an ABC podcast.
The Northern Territory, much like Queensland, WA, SA and Tasmania, has had great success at keeping COVID at bay. Sure, there have been some breaches, but snap lockdowns and closed borders have always succeeded at preventing community transmission. That is, until now. So what happened? I'm Stephen Smiley.
And I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre. And today on The Signal, how did the Northern Territory lose control of COVID-19? And can Australia's harshest localised lockdowns and a dramatically boosted vaccination drive turn it around?
Could you just introduce yourself for us?
Hello, I'm Jane Barton and I'm a news journalist and I've worked in the Darwin ABC for 13 years now.
Let's start this conversation by, talking a little about the state of the Northern Territory throughout the pandemic, because really, up until very recently, it's been a pretty extraordinary run. Just how COVID-free has the NT been for most of the pandemic and how has it achieved that?
Well, we've been incredibly lucky here. We've been almost in a weird COVID-free bubble while the pandemic has mostly been happening all around us in Australia and the world. And we've had just a few cases of what the government's called interstate transmission in March at the beginning of the pandemic, and then a couple early this year in June and August where we had some COVID come in from interstate travellers and a FIFO worker. But basically, until this month, we've been in a situation where the government has been saying we haven't had any community transmission because all those cases that came in were quickly picked up and people were whipped off to Harrod Springs. And how we've done this is really that because the NT is more isolated, doesn't have as much travel as the more populous states, the government had a 2 to 3 week window here where we were ahead and we could watch what was happening in Sydney and Melbourne and quickly lock down, close the borders. And the government here has taken a very cautious approach to border closures, hotspots, wearing masks. And so really that cautious approach and having a head start has kept us really quite COVID-free during the whole pandemic.
And that's really up until just recently. So how did this current outbreak begin and, you know, how did it sort of get away?
It's a sad situation, really, because how it got in was just one woman who lied on her border entry form saying she'd just come from Cairns, and that was earlier in November when she had actually been in Melbourne in a hotspot. And then she spent the weekend with a worker who was travelling from Darwin down to Katherine. And that was basically, it was interesting because there were three cases that popped up then, all in workers in Humpty Doo and Darwin. And then there was a 9-day gap. So the government basically had lifted the mask restrictions and movement was basically free again. And then we started having cases popping up first in Katherine and then in the community of Robinson River. And that started basically because an Indigenous lady who was living with other people in Katherine flew to Robinson River. And because lots of Indigenous people live in quite crowded houses in big family groups, then we started to have cases multiplying quite rapidly where people have moved around both communities outside Katherine and also in Robinson River. So at Robinson River, which is in the Gulf of Carpentaria, there's been a cluster of cases there. They were all brought to quarantine in the Harrod Springs Quarantine Centre in Darwin. But in the Katherine region, now the virus has spread to some of the remote communities on the edge of Katherine, like Binjari.
And tell us a little bit about some of these communities. So these are very small places, predominantly Indigenous population. What are they like?
Well, for example, Binjari just has a bit over 30 houses, and those are quite old houses with up to 10 to 15 people living in them. They have those old window rattler air cons that you need power cards to run. And so in Binjari, for example, where a cluster of cases has popped up, people have been locked down now in their houses for 2 weeks where they actually can't leave the house at all. And so really, they're having all all of their food delivered and some power cards delivered so they can run the air cons. And the CEO of the local Binjari Community Aboriginal Corporation, Deb Aloisi, says that's really needed there.
I think it's needed because Indigenous people, they're very transient. They won't stay still. So, I've been having every day, they'd text me and say, you know, Mum, such and such has left the community. You know, they go walk through the bush and get into town, or walk through the bush and go across to Rockhole out that way, because it's parallel to Binjari. So I think it's the best thing they can do. And still, they're still going out. I'm still getting emails to say such and such left. And then I've notified the police that are out there.
Some of the wee small communities don't even really have a big store. For example, they would normally go into Catherine for food shopping every single day because a lot of communities don't have fridges in the house, for example. So it's not like you can store food to have later. So, I mean, really, it's almost like it's almost as if a cyclone has devastated those communities, the response that they're having to have. But the government is taking a very cautious approach to it and just saying, you know, this is what we need because we need people to stop moving around. And the only way to guarantee that is for people in those communities to literally stay in their properties and not even to go out to the shop or anything like that.
And is everyone subject to those conditions, or just people that aren't vaccinated subject to those conditions?
Everyone is subject to those conditions in Binjari and Rockhole. Obviously, in Catherine, there is more freedom of movement. There's still mask wearing, and close contacts are having to isolate. Anybody that's even suspected to have been a close contact who can't isolate is being brought to Harrod Springs Quarantine Centre in Darwin. So, particularly in the two small communities outside Catherine, yeah, those very tight restrictions of movement. But in the in Robinson River and in Catherine, where the other two clusters are, people are able to move around but wearing masks and not going to gatherings and things like that. One of the residents who lives in Rockhole, Kevin Rogers, says, the houses are old and dilapidated and it is tough looking at staying in there for 2 weeks.
Well, these houses were built back in 1982, sometime like that. They had only 3 bedrooms. And big more people lived together, you know. Aboriginal people, they like to stay close-knit family.
Tell us a little more about how the communities have responded, and I know you've been speaking to people in the health sector in Catherine, for instance. What has the health response been?
Well, really, because there was a lot of misinformation and people not really going to get vaccinated in a lot of our Indigenous communities until fairly recently, it's been a pretty scary experience for people, particularly around the Catherine region. Basically, a lot of Indigenous people thought things like, it's only white people that get coronavirus. And so in Catherine region, for example, the Wirli Wurrinjang Aboriginal Health Service, it's providing health services both to Aboriginal people in Catherine and communities like Binjari. And I spoke to Lisa Mumpin, who's the chairwoman of the Wirli Wurrinjang Aboriginal Health Service. And this is what she said about how people are feeling at the moment.
It's kind of, not expected, but, there's been talks that COVID will be in town and, it's very scary as I speak. We share a lot of things. You know, we still live in overcrowded houses. You know, all this is a strong risk to a lot of our people.
And so, even though Lisa Mumpin's saying that, people are now quite scared of COVID, she says even this far into the pandemic, it's been really an uphill battle trying to get the communities to come and out in force and get vaccinated.
People can be just ignorant or stubborn. There's been a lot of different information, you know, a lot of that have kind of affected our mob. And I just like to say, look, please, people, you know, we are in that risky time now, and to ensure that we just keep safe and try and encourage those who, you know, haven't been vaccinated that needs to be vaccinated.
Now, we've been talking there largely about the Catherine region, and as you said, there are some pretty extreme lockdowns in place there now. But let's talk also about Robinson River. So what are people feeling about the outbreak in that community?
Yeah, it's interesting because this is a very remote area. It's basically 4 hours' drive from Katherine, which is the biggest centre. So people there feel really that they're far away from the sources of information. And they're also really worried now in the vicinity of Robinson River. And it's interesting because even of the most, some of the most senior elders, an elder, Jack Green, who I've spoken to, who's an Agarwa elder, even he is saying that he and his family aren't yet vaccinated.
I'm really worrying now how far that thing going to spread, you know?
Jack, have you had the vaccine yourself?
No, I never got needles. So has my family never got needles. We're concerned about it because there's not enough information. They'll never explain about that thing properly, you know. You can get this needle, it will protect you for getting that virus. It doesn't say that you're going to carry that virus, you know. You'll still carry it, you know what I mean? They didn't say nothing about that.
Scientists and the health authorities are saying that even if the vaccine doesn't stop you getting COVID-19, that it will stop you getting really sick from it in most cases. Do you and other people in the community really need to have doctors and health staff come and really explain that very clearly to you?
Yeah, I think they should be in Danny and have another meeting with those people that never got needle. They need to explain a bit more. Now, properly, we need to sit down and talk properly.
And also, Jane, one of the people who was really kind of raising the national profile of this outbreak early on was an NT Labor Senator, Malandiri McCarthy, because all the first cases were in her family, right? What has she had to say about the condition that some of these patients are in now?
Well, Malandiri McCarthy, for her, of course, it has been very personal. And it was interesting to see how open she was. As soon as the cases came up, she basically said, "They're all in my family." But she was really wanting to make the point to people who are thinking that COVID isn't real or they don't need to get vaccinated. She was wanting people to really think these are the symptoms that people in my family have, including her 30-year-old sister, who's one of the few people who've had to go to hospital so far.
She's having a really difficult time. She's able to talk a bit more this morning. I've spoken to my cousins and my aunt and uncle, and they're struggling.
You have one member of family in hospital still, do you?
Yes, we do. And I just heard she's on oxygen in Royal Darwin Hospital.
What kind of things are your family struggling with in terms of their symptoms?
Difficulty at night with being able to breathe, and some blocked noses, throats. For my sister, it's had a lot to do with feeling extremely cold when perhaps she's extremely hot.
So it's a pretty scary picture. And while the daily numbers seem to have improved somewhat lately, there were just 2 new cases in the community in Katherine yesterday, for example, the NT government has been stressing that the situation remains incredibly dangerous. This was the Chief Minister, Michael Gunner, underlining that last Wednesday.
If you waited because you didn't think COVID would get here, it's here. If you waited because you didn't think COVID was a serious virus, well, you're wrong. The virus has killed 5.1 million people in the world. I fear it will take lives in the territory before the year is out.
And Jane says that's not the only message the government's been trying to relay.
We've also heard a lot from the acting chief health officer, Dr. Charles Payne, and he's really saying not only are we expecting that we could have deaths in the territory? But he's actually been very open about the fact that our health system, particularly the hospital system, is very overstretched. We've had things called code yellows in our main hospital, the Royal Darwin Public Hospital, where the services are already at breaking point, to the point where a lot of elective surgeries have to be delayed. And we've had those even before we've had any COVID patients come in.
We've been planning for this for a very long time, but I do acknowledge that we are under pressure already. Our health system is under significant pressure all of the time. We have high demands on our health system in the territory. The important point I wish to make, and again appeal to the community, we need your help to prevent those admissions to hospital. Our system is prone to being overwhelmed if we cannot get people protected.
Now, Jane, just on that point that he's bringing up there, I mean, as we sort of said at the start, the Northern Territory has had a pretty long lead time to prepare for this, longer than almost anywhere else, you know, in the world. It seems like they've sort of been caught a bit short here in some ways. How is that?
It definitely does, particularly when you look at the capacity of remote clinics, the hospital system. I mean, the NT government is just saying things like, you know, we've got 12 negative pressure rooms. Other people are being in our hospital in Darwin. We have 24 ICU beds for the whole territory. And so really, we are looking at a situation where we're very stretched in terms of being able to have enough staff, particularly when we know that it takes a very long time to recruit and train staff, particularly with all the problems of health staff being able to move interstate with all the different border rules. And the Australian Medical Association, NT, has been warning about this for a long time. 2 years ago, it wrote a pleading letter to the federal government saying that we need more health staff in the Royal Darwin Hospital. And the president of the AMANT, Dr. Robert Parker, who's actually a senior doctor at the Royal Darwin Hospital, is saying, really, we do need to look at this workforce issue as quick as we can at this point.
If there was a significant outbreak, it would put major pressure on an already very stressed hospital system.
What's causing the capacity pressures primarily? I mean, are we talking literally not enough staff and, you know, not enough money to have enough ward beds open, for example?
It's the stuff I referred to Minister Hunt a couple of years ago, where territory hospitals are 2 to 3 times as busy as other hospitals in Australia. And that's a really high activity level. So when you're dealing with hospitals that are already stressed, then an additional burden, such as COVID, just adds a massive, you know, massive extra burden to already stressed hospitals. I mean, we're very aware that even before COVID, we had level 4 escalations and code yellows, which indicated, you know, it was a further stress on a very busy hospital system.
If we needed to increase our workforce, would it be quite difficult to do that quickly?
Well, again, potentially we can draw on the resources of the Centre for National Resilience as an extreme example. But again, it's going to be a complicated issue.
Now, these lockdowns come at a time when many other parts of the country are reopening. I mean, South Australia opens today on the 23rd of November. How does this outbreak affect the reopening roadmap that all the states and territories signed on to?
Well, it's interesting because even though it's been very cautious up to now, the Gunner government is really trying to get now into lockstep with the other states, and it's actually brought forward some of the openings. So, for example, by the 20th of December, it's expecting that people returning from interstate will be able to not even really have to do home quarantine. And it's talking about having the international border restrictions very minimal for the territory by the beginning of January. And that's really quite worrying. The Aboriginal Medical Services, who are saying, you know, considering we have low rates of vaccination in Indigenous communities and we have really very high levels of underlying health conditions in the Indigenous communities, maybe we do need to put the brakes on more. And I spoke to the head of the NT's Peak Aboriginal Medical Services Alliance, who's John Patterson, and he's saying really he's very worried about what's coming.
We're expecting more cases, don't want to alarm people, but that's what we've got to be prepared for. This Delta virus is very, very fast moving. It goes like wildfire. It'll spread like wildfire throughout community, and we're seeing that Robinson River, unfortunately, and other places. I think we've really got to be on standby.
Why do you think some of the vaccination rates are still around 10% double dose in some communities, but then much higher in others?
Jane, we're up against hesitancy. That's publicly known. We're working tirelessly with all service providers where we identify in those local government areas where the vaccination numbers are down, and the Barkly is one of those areas, so we've got teams, we've got plans in place. We've actually sent down resources to help with the vaccination rollout. There are early indications coming back that I'm aware of that there's been a slight increase, but there's yet more work to be done.
So, as difficult as it is to predict these things, what do we think is going to be the shape of this outbreak over the next little while?
Well, both the NT government authorities and Aboriginal Medical Services are really thinking that we will have more cases, but their real hope is that they will be able to, by having these very harsh lockdowns of 2 weeks where you literally can't leave your house in some of these Aboriginal communities, stop that from spreading further. But they were very worried because there have been positive wastewater samples in some other remote communities as far away as Central Australia. So they are expecting that there could be more cases popping up in different places. But they really are hoping that if they can keep these clusters quite small, that they will at least for a while delay COVID being a widespread thing in the territory until they can come to the point where more people are vaccinated at least.
That's The Signal for today. Our email, if you want to reach me or Smiley, is signal@abc.net.au.
And we'll catch you tomorrow. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.